Do you feel like there's something happening in your home or business? Something you can't explain? Do you think that whatever is happening seems to be paranormal? Do they exist? Florida Ghost Hunters at FloridaGhostHunters.com are looking for haunted locations throughout Central Florida. Let the team at Florida Ghost Hunters investigate your paranormal experience. Their mission is to disprove a haunting with science, to find a reasonable explanation to a problem, and whatever is left becomes evidence. FloridaGhostHunters.com. If you've experienced paranormal activity in your home or business, you are urged to visit FloridaGhostHunters.com and click Need Help. FloridaGhostHunters.com.
Hi, this is Luke.
And this is Tobin from Quest Research.
Hey, Tobin, what do you get when four guys with absolutely no video experience whatsoever decide to produce their own online paranormal TV show?
I don't know. What? Oh, wait. I do know. Ghost Diaries, right?
That's right.
You can check us out and get involved at www.questresearch.net. And the good thing about being new is that we will only get better.
Michigan with the good folks from Ghostly Talk. Oh, this place is creepy, man, but nowhere near as creepy as Wolfman Max Nightmare Cinema. It's a haunted drive-in, babies, and you know what we do there? We host classic B-horror and sci-fi movies, just like the ones you grew up with when you was a kid. And it's at Wolfman Max Nightmare Cinema right now, hosting on public access TV all over Metro Detroit. But guess what, kiddies? It's coming to you, and all you gotta do is have a computer. Just go to Wolfman Max Nightmare Cinema. It's nightmarecinema.com. We'll be broadcasting the show real soon, right from the website. Stay tuned. It's Wolfman Max Nightmare Cinema. Bye.
when you flashed, I saw what looked like a figure standing in the hall.
Okay, this is Screen Team. We're ready for EVP sweep.
That is weird. These cameras don't do this.
Water supposedly will come off and on in various rooms.
So our EMF meter started to go haywire.
You're listening to the number one source for paranormal evidence brought to you firsthand by real investigators in the field. No hoaxes, no disinformation. You're listening to The Ghost Project.
I found myself face to face with someone or something that was attempting to play with my psyche as well as my physical being.
How sure are you of that?
I'm 100% sure of that.
And now, for the man of many announcements.
I'm trying to keep it rolling here tonight, because we didn't get a, we blew our first hour with just, so we yeah, got we got to supplement it through the show this week. We have a winner for the contest.
Excellent.
I am not going to name names, I don't want to get sued, but we have a winner. Thank you.
Congratulations.
All. Thank you all for sending emails and all that stuff, but you lost. Sorry.
The winner does already know who they are. I saw.
Yeah. Congratulations to you. You have a brand spanking new EVP postmortem canticle.
And I've touched it,
CD.
So it's really important now.
Yeah, it's better than an autograph.
Did you read this introduction for Larry's introduction?
Well,
did you read it?
Yeah.
It's a tongue twister. I wish me luck.
Well, it's a challenge.
Good luck,
for you guys.
It'll be a challenge. There's like definitely some 25 cent and 50 cent words in here. Ready?
Go for it.
Larry E. Arnold redirected a background in engineering to explore the unconventional.
Mm-hmm.
Recognized internationally for his pioneering research in Fortiana, phenomena that challenges orthodoxy,
mm-hmm.
he is regarded as the leading authority on spontaneous human combustion.
One of the unsung coolest topics, I think.
Oh,
maybe
absolutely.
Under the paranormal, yeah.
His investigation of SHC spans a quarter century in
yes.
several continents. Larry is the author of 3 books, and he has been featured on hundreds of radio shows and many television programs in the U.S., Canada, and Great Britain.
Yes.
The website, www.parascience.com, parascience.com.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it'll be permanently linked up in the guest section of
ghostlytalk.com. Yes. Yes.
We would like to very, very... warm-heartedly welcome Larry Arnold. And I didn't mean that. I did not mean that to be a warm-heartedly. I mean, that's just, like, really lame.
That was a real bad pun there.
That was the worst pun ever. I thought about it after I said it. We want to welcome Larry Arnold to Ghostly Talk.
Good evening, folks. Your pun is forgiven.
Thank you. Oh, thank you so much. I did not mean
see,
it.
See, our job here with the as host of the show, Larry, is, you know, it's really, no, in
we
all seriousness,
well.
it's a trample all over each other as much as possible tonight. So watch out for that. Larry, I got to say this publicly. I've been really wanting to tackle this subject on the show for a number of years. And I've also wanted to have you know, as the main proponent of spontaneous human combustion, I've been wanting to have you on the show for a number of years. So it's a real honor to talk to you here and really get into this subject. So thank you so much for joining us.
Well, you're welcome. It's our pleasure. I hope we will entertain you and your listeners for the next hour or so on what we believe is one of the most fascinating, unsung, and most difficult and challenging of all 14 subjects to investigate.
And, you know, I
yeah.
agree. And here's the thing, Larry. I've been studying you know, paranormal and parasciences for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, since I was a teenager. And Of course, I've run across spontaneous human combustion. It's a chapter in many books. It's the subject of many books. It was written up in, you know, you see a newspaper article here. Yep. You see nowadays you see it on TV there. I think I even remember something on PBS way, way, way back.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're talking 30 years ago or something.
Mm-hmm.
So it is something that I've, you know, seen. It's not technically one of my topics that mm-hmm. I follow, though. But I have been exposed to it. So I imagine I'm like a lot of people interested, but I just don't know where to go with it. I'm kind of scared of it.
Well, let's just get it out there, because I think some people may be going, wow, this is a lot to take in as far as just the name itself. What is spontaneous human combustion?
Always best to start with the definition. That way everybody knows exactly what's being discussed.
Yeah.
So here we go. Mm-hmm. Spontaneous human combustion is the phenomenon and process whereby a person can smoke, blister, or otherwise combust in the absence of contact with a known, identifiable, nearby external ignition source or burn agent.
Okay.
That is, it happens in the absence of contact with a flame or caustic chemicals, or radioactive material, or high amperage, or nearby radiant heat.
Okay, and just to flesh that out, too, I think the people who may have some exposure to this think it's just like people just burst into flames and just burn. I mean, it's not just that. I mean, it don't have to be a 3-alarm fire, right? It can be any sort of things. I mean, people just would start, there's been stories I've seen where people just like, parts of their bodies would just start to burn for no reason whatsoever. They didn't die as a result of it, but they just had, you know, they burned in one area of their body. I think what people see, the people who have said this lately, just see those photos of just the legs.
Those great, phenomenal, like, cases where there's just the legs in front of the chair kind of thing, yeah.
It's all sorts of things, though. It isn't under just, like, somebody just bursting in the flames and just, like, dying, right?
You're quite right. When we began our research into this subject seriously back in the early 70s, the consensus that at that time in the popular literature and indeed in the scientific literature and the medical literature of the day was that spontaneous human combustion was always a pile of powder once having been a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And as we've pursued our research over the last several decades, we found that that is what we call classic spontaneous human combustion, but it takes on many, many different forms. In fact, most likely you yourself, and certainly most of your listeners, have experienced spontaneous human combustion themselves. We have, in the context of being burned by sun. Now, by definition that we've just given you, sunburn is SHC. You're not in contact with a nearby radiant heat source. You haven't touched electrical outlets. You haven't been exposed to high amperage. You haven't been exposed to a caustic chemical, and yet your skin will turn red, which is a first-degree burn.
Uh-huh.
It could even blister, which is a second-degree burn. So for those people who are adamantly refusing to accept the reality of spontaneous human combustion, all they have to do is realize that if anybody's been sunburned, that person's experienced spontaneous human combustion and survived.
Here's a question for you. What about high stress, high blood pressure? I know that there's times, like recently, where I've gotten really upset with something, and I could actually feel my face get warm.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be an example of spontaneous human combustion also?
If your skin doesn't turn, you know, first-degree burn red or doesn't blister, no, by definition, that would not be spontaneous human combustion. However, you're getting into a very arcane area here that might relate to spontaneous combustion in a broader sense.
Uh-huh.
Anything that causes the body's temperature to suddenly increase.
Mm-hmm.
Women and some men who go under, you know, like menopausal-like conditions, you could be hitting at something that might lead to spontaneous human combustion.
Well, because, I mean, in some of the cases that we've read, and I know Doug and I have both looked, you know, read and talked about maybe, you know, in conversation, a lot of the cases from what we see, and like I said, this is just a layman talking right now, so correct me if I say anything dumb. Some of the cases we've seen, a lot of these people, their first rate, they were overweight, they were heavy people, right? That was one of the ones that went through there. Now, they were smokers.
Smoking, usually,
But, you know, you're saying that that spontaneous human combustion, again, it's a result of it's flames, it's burning as a result of no source, though, which a cigarette, you know, that's a flame, that's a heat source, right? But I've seen that, you know, it seems like people that were overweight, which that obviously, you know, it's not healthy, right? And it leads to high blood pressure and things like that. I kind of thought that that may have been something that may have been related somehow, which it may be not, obviously. People bursting into flames like that, I guess. I wanted to find that out of the high blood pressure thing because it happens to me often.
No, I don't think you're under suspicion or under SHC watch.
Yeah,
There's no, like, warning or watch level for you to burst into flames.
Not yet. Don't be watching over me.
Yeah.
So, but that's something I noticed, that there was a lot, it was heavier people and things like that, and I kind of attribute that.
Is that entirely true? Because, I mean, I've seen the literature, some of the literature, not all of it, but I've seen the big cases, and usually that's what they say, oh, the person was smoking and they were way overweight.
Yeah, let us go through what was once believed had to be present in order for spontaneous human combustion to even begin to occur.
Okay.
Back in the 1700s and early 1800s, when the medical community, if reporting the expression, hotly debated subject, they claimed that all victims, there you go, there's our pun for the evening, all victims had to be elderly, they had to be senile, they had to be sedentary, they had to be corpulent, i.e. overweight, they had to be alcoholics, and they're undoubtedly smoking or otherwise drinking and in the presence of a situation that would lead to a careless smoking mishap.
Uh-huh.
Our research has found that all those conditions do not need to be present in the victim. While some people are indeed overweight, corpulent, senile, sedentary, and smokers, others are underweight, thin, almost emaciated, non-smokers, teetotalers, and perhaps as young as 6 weeks old, perhaps as old as 114 years.
Oh, wow.
It was claimed also that all victims at one time had to be female. That is not the case. In our database of now almost 500 cases that fit the definition of classic or abnormal spontaneous human combustion events, gender-wise, 50% are female, 47% are male, and history simply doesn't tell us the gender of the other 3%, but basically 50-50 down the middle.
Okay. All right, so, that covers... That pretty much covers the whole board, then. I mean, this isn't just...
Exactly.
I mean, it can happen to anybody.
By demographics, almost anyone is a potential candidate to experience spontaneous human combustion. That said, we have to stress also that this is an extraordinarily rare event. You're much more likely to be struck by lightning, perhaps even multiple times, than you are to experience spontaneous human combustion once, other than the broad context of being burned by solar radiation.
Okay, all right. Let me ask you this, though, if I may, Larry. Concerning this, I mean, this field, I mean, you've been doing this for a very long time. Do you think this maybe, I mean, you have obviously a database of all these cases and stuff like that. I mean, do you think this may be some type of myth, or, I mean, do you believe this really, really happens to people, I mean, as far as spontaneous human combustion is concerned?
Well, certainly if you accept our definition of the phenomenon, and allow that to embrace sunburn, then clearly it's not a myth. But beyond that, in the classic sense of spontaneous combustion, we could fill the rest of this hour with quotations by experts in the fire science field who say that spontaneous combustion is a myth, a superstition, something born of medieval ignorance, a perpetuation on the stain of science and professionalism of fire analysis, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
All that's been claimed of our research, all that has been claimed of spontaneous human combustion in general, we don't accept a bit of it. All that is bunk. Spontaneous human combustion is real. It is a bona fide fact. It is a true Fortean anomaly and something that cries out for understanding and study and explanation. Just a simple case in point from our book Ablaze, back in April of 1980, a young child named Tong Xiang in China, 4 years of age at the time, was rushed to a hospital after having burned a 1-inch square hole in 2 layers of his clothing. While in the hospital under the watch of physicians, he spontaneously ignited 4 times in the next 120 minutes. His right hand, his armpits, his genitals were burned, according to a Chinese newspaper. So right there, you accept that, you obviously must accept spontaneous human combustion. Clearly, the young gentleman in this case survived, but we have, as you've alluded to in the kind introduction you gave to us, the other extreme, which is classic spontaneous human combustion, by definition, by historical precedent, in which the body is consumed almost completely to powder, burned more thoroughly than can be achieved under normal operating conditions in a crematorium retort.
Yeah.
And yet, surrounding combustibles that have much more easily attain combustion ignition points.
Mm-hmm.
Newspapers, linens, oil-based linoleum flooring, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Even paint that should blister under moderately heat, extreme heat. All those materials escape significant fire and heat damage.
Yeah.
And the body itself, in the midst of all that combustible material, is consumed by some energy that appears to be fire, right down to the bone, including the bone and skeleton, to powder.
Yeah, and that's what the weirdest thing is, though, Larry, and we've seen all, we've done it, I know we've looked at a lot of these photos, and it's just the most, you just said, like, you know, there'll be just one concentrated area where the body was, that there's powder now.
And there's things all around that there may be aren't a little, even, there could be a flower in a vase right next to him on
the
table.
And it don't get burned. The paint don't get burned. Fine. Nothing gets any smoke or fire damage whatsoever, except for this one little area where the person may have been sitting at.
And that just is really scary.
Yeah.
We handed photographs of some of those classic cases to physicians, to medical examiners. One particular case comes to mind, and immediately a Dr. Lester Adelson out of Ohio
mm-hmm.
looked at those photographs and immediately declared them be hoaxes. Now, this was a gentleman who had actually written critically about spontaneous human combustion in the medical literature. He said these photographs are hoaxes. And the question put to him was, well, Dr. Adelson, how can you say that?
Uh-huh.
Why do you determine that these photographs in your hands are hoaxes? He said, because people don't burn like this. Therefore, these photographs have to be hoaxes.
Well, that isn't
well we knew who took the photographs that were handed to him. They were newspaper editors. They were professional fire photographers. They were not hoaxes. They've been proven to be bona fide representations of real, actual fire scene fatalities.
Well, it always comes back.
You have to deal with the facts of the evidence that is presented to you.
Well, it always comes back to this stuff. With any of these with types of occurrences within this stuff, I mean, it seems that we hear this, a photo of sort, evidence of sort. I mean, you're always going to have someone that's going to take away from it and say, no, it's a complete hoax, right? And my question always comes, I mean, you know, I'm not sold on everything myself. I mean, there's, you know, we have to ask questions. That's what it's all about, I think. But, you know, I think, you know, would somebody have to, you know, in a case like, you know, from the early 80s, the 70s, whatever it may be, what would they have to gain, really, by putting out hoax? I would like to know. If it's a hoax, that's fine. Why would it be a hoax? What would they have to gain? I mean, it seems like somebody would have to have something to gain to put that time and effort into that. That's my question to that.
One would think so, and we would put the same question to those who posit that premise to debunk, dismiss, or otherwise demean the concept of spontaneous human combustion. The case of Mary Weezer back in 1951, July of that year in St. Petersburg, Florida, 175-pound widow, living alone at the time, but in an apartment building with her landlady at the other end of the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
The morning of July 2nd, her body was found behind a warm-to-the-touch doorknob, to have been consumed to a pile of powder, which included the chair in which she sat, all of which weighed about 7 to 8 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Surrounding day bed linens, piles of newspapers, other furniture in the room had escaped the inferno that consumed Mrs. Weezer right down to the flooring.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, this was a fiercely investigated subject or case because the officials initially were completely bumfuddled.
Yeah.
They looked for accelerants. They could find none. They looked for foul play. They could find none.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it was posited that she had been the victim of a crime, an arson murder, if you will, wherein the perpetrators had broken into her apartment, killed the poor lady, taken her body out, burned it outside the apartment, and then brought the ashes back and insulted the apartment to cover up the crime. I mean, does that make sense to you?
That's too much effort to put into something.
But, okay. And yet that was the extent to which the case was both investigated and the attempts being made to dismiss it as anything other than what some of the investigators finally came to the conclusion it had to be in the absence of any other reasonable assessment, and that was spontaneous human combustion.
Mm.
We talked to one of the firemen who actually shoveled her ashes out of her sitting room, and he told us, you know, It just had to be spontaneous human combustion. There wasn't anything else left that could explain how she died in the circumstances in which she did.
Well, here's my question about these classic cases especially.
Mm-hmm.
I've been set on fire accidentally a couple times. I think we've all. I mean, I've been
wild, crazy party days.
I played in metal bands. You know, it happened.
Yeah. Did it hurt?
Well, I mean, I've had clothes set on fire. You know, when you're at a cookout, sometimes accidents happen. I've never asked for it or dumped kerosene on my leg and said, "Here, flame on, guys." No, it's been an accident. But my point of it is that when
but
it happens,
are people who can do that. Like you can fill up your hand, your butane and then go poof and it makes a, you know, but it doesn't, that doesn't hurt or anything. It just happens.
Well, my point was, though, is that when it's happened to me, the first thing I've done is went, wah! And I just, like, went and started, no, I'm serious. I started batting it out and I'm rolling around or I'm acting like a complete nut because I'm scared. Fire is scary. It can harm you. It can burn you. Now, a lot of these cases we've just talked about, they just find this pile of ash. Right? It seems like to me, if somebody was to spontaneously combust and they set on fire, or they combust, right? And they notice, hey, I'm on fire. This really sucks. It seems like they would react the same way that anybody would react to a fire.
Screaming.
Well, and jumping around the room.
Sit there and take it.
Yeah.
Right. You're going to start screaming and moving and jumping up and down or trying to roll.
Yeah, they would. In the process of that, they'd knock over chairs. They'd knock over tables. They'd probably burn other things in the room. They might set other stuff on fire in the room, right? It just seems like they just set on fire.
And they're gone.
And they just burn, and they don't move a muscle for some reason. That is just, could we talk about, I mean, have you heard anything about this idea?
That, Larry, does that mean that it happens so quickly that they can't react, is the beginning stage of it like a paralysis?
Yeah.
I mean, how come there isn't any of the commotion you would expect with an emergency?
Right. You've made a very astute observation, and clearly you've seen some of the programs that have featured us in our research on a number of the television programs that we've done, one of which aired yesterday on the Bio Channel, by the way.
I haven't watched it in a while.
Our answer to that is twofold.
Yeah.
The reason we don't see indications of screaming, writhing, crashing around objects in the room is A, either the process is so quick that the people don't have time to react physically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or B, and evidence strongly supports this contention, as well as the rapidity of the fire in some of these instances, that being that the process, whatever it is, that incinerates the body from within, basically circumvents or decouples the nervous system so that these people are not experiencing the kind of horrific, agonizing pain and shock that you would commonsensically expect one to in the presence of a fire that is consuming their body.
Okay. All right, so basically, I mean, they could just go into shock. They could, and that's the things, I mean, I thought of too. But it's maybe they just get paralyzed by something. Something paralyzes them; they can't move, and they may not even feel it. They may go, "Okay, well, this is the end."
Well, one of the things that we deal with as ghost hunters is people reporting, sleep paralysis, and then when they wake up, they're completely paralyzed, and then the old hag comes in and sits on their chest. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the old hag syndrome. So there is indeed a physical, like, known
thing
that happens to the body in that it can get paralyzed. It can paralyze itself some way. I know, did we pass our break?
No, we didn't pass our break.
Oh, okay.
We're fine. We're fine. But no, I think that was really important to point that out, at least discuss it, because that's the one thing I noticed, though, obviously, in these photos we've seen, is that these people just seem, it just seemed like, in my mind, I was just like, somebody's sitting there watching TV or laying somewhere or doing something, and they just go, boom.
That's what it looks like
from
the fireman photos or from the police photos. That's pretty much exactly what it looks like.
We're going to talk more about this after the break. Larry, hang on tight for us for 1 second, okay? Spontaneous human combustion. I'm so happy to be talking about this because I think this is a really important subject. It's a very interesting subject, too. And it's one of these ones that, it's not a widely accepted thing. We're going to talk some more about that, too, after the break also. This is Ghostly Talk. I'm Scott Alford.
And I'm Doug.
And I'm Bonnie.
We'll be right back after this.
Miss a live broadcast? Feel free to download it direct from the on-demand archives at ghostlytalk.com.
Power Hub Radio.
The Internet's only rock and roll paranormal extravaganza.
Special guest with us, Robbie Thomas, psychic medium. Where is the Lawrence House?
It's in Ontario, Canada. It is a house that was owned by a shipbuilder, and it was haunted. The tools of the trade back then or baby powder. The reason being is I could see, and the kids with me couldn't, so I figured if I threw the baby powder in the air as the spirit was walking through, it would cover it, and then they could say, oh, we see it now. The next tool was a flashlight, so we knew where we were going, and a rope, so we could tie it around so we don't get taken away by the spirit. So that
hey,
was
Anthony, isn't that what your last girlfriend said?
That's just a Friday night for Anthony. Baby powder, a rope, and a flashlight.
Para Hub Radio, Thursdays, 10 p.m. to midnight Eastern, on Bounce Radio and parahub.org.
Do you want to dive into the bizarre world of the paranormal? Do ghosts, UFOs, or the supernatural amaze you to the point of wanting to learn more? Then you need BVRN, the Black Vault Radio Network. With more than 750 hours of on-demand talk radio, syndicated for more than 35 shows, the Black Vault Radio Network is your one-stop shop for the world of the unexplained. Check us out and tune in 24 hours a day, www.blackvaultradio.com. Again, that's www.blackvaultradio.com.
What are we made of? Why do I get sick? How can I live a more balanced whole life? These are just a few of the questions explored each week by naturopath, medical intuitive, and clairvoyant Dr. Rita Louise on Just Energy Radio. Explore your possibilities every Friday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. Join us at JustEnergyRadio.com.
On this for a second. This is good stuff. Speaking of which.
No, wait. I have to do the intro for you.
Okay, go ahead.
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. That's
it's
it.
It's Scott L.
It's Scott L with another announcement.
Wanted to thank all the great independent bands that supplied us with our wonderful music tonight. I talked about Diane DiStasio for their first break. We did about 6:30 there. Exciter. A band I grew up listening to.
Wow.
Blistering Records. Thanks, guys, for sending us out that great tune, The Punisher by Exciter. I used to listen to those guys on my paper route when I was a teenager. That shows you how old and good they are. Right?
Yes.
Also, Fester Feely's Grudge Magic. Really cool tune there a little while ago. And finally, the song that you just heard, the band called After Them, I've been told jungle. It's a jungle version. That's why it sounds so weird.
Oh, okay.
And stuff like that. But, yeah, thank you guys out there.
Freaky
for
awesome.
All the bands that have been submitting music to us, we really appreciate it. And we're going to get them all on there for you guys. Keep them coming. We
and
really
of course,
appreciate it.
Bon Iver.
This is an independent show. We deal with independent bands. This is what we do here. And that's how it's always going
to
be.
And I independently want to go to www.parascience.com. That's parascience.com. That is Larry Arnold's website. It describes what we're talking about. We're talking about spontaneous human combustion.
Yeah.
We're trying to get our minds wrapped around it because we've seen the pictures.
This stuff is insane.
And,
crazy,
and,
man.
And if you've studied any kind of literature on paranormal experiences, there's usually at least a couple pages to a chapter in a book on spontaneous human combustion. And we're learning a lot more. We're learning also that not only it's not just what you see in those quick like chapter worth thing.
Well, the classic,
you see the classic ones where a pile of ash with some legs in front of it, or it could be something even just like a sunburn, because that is. You did get burned, and you weren't touching any, anything that would accelerate or even fire. You weren't touching anything. You were just standing there, and you got burned.
Uh-huh.
So there's a wide range of this kind of stuff.
Yeah, it isn't just, like we said, the classic stuff that we've referred, that I think a lot of people get interested in this stuff by, but it's like you said, sunburns and all types of weird things. But the one thing I have to ask you, Larry, though, is, this isn't a really widely accepted thing. From what I understand, I mean, there is a lot of opposition to declare this may be true Freudian phenomena, right? Why do you think there is this opposition?
Oh, there's a huge amount of opposition to the concept of spontaneous human combustion and to our research with it. As you said earlier, before the bottom of the hour break, it's been declared a fairy tale, it's been declared myth, it's been declared superstition. Basically, it comes down to invoking the five Ds. It's disbelief, derision, disgust, disavow, denial, and debunking. That's how mainstream science, that's how the quote-unquote skeptics deal with the subject of spontaneous human combustion. Mm-hmm. Why is that? You alluded to one reason earlier, and that is fear. People are afraid of fire, and the concept of someone being able to catch fire internally and burn without warning, without forenotice, apparently being unable to do anything about it once it begins is horrifically frightening to many people.
Yeah.
Beyond that, it's just we believe it's also the subject of SponCom invokes xenophobia in a lot of people. That is fear of the unknown. Not fear that it could happen to them per se, but it's just the intellectual fear of this concept being real. I mean, how do you deal with it? How do you explain it? That's one of the things that has kept us interested in the subject for more than three decades. We believe, as you said categorically, that SHC is indeed a real phenomenon. The question now becomes, how does it happen? Why does it happen? Where does it happen? Can it be prevented? Can people's lives be saved once we understand what is going on here? that raises a lot of really intriguing questions for us that we wish mainstream fire science would get involved with trying to understand and answer as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, more cases I want, if we can get into these too, if you don't mind. I mean,
sure.
I think we've thrown a lot of theory around, a lot of ideas so far, but, you know, there's a couple of cases that you might, you know,
well,
that you could.
Yeah, because I enjoyed hearing the case about the little boy who, you know, was in the hospital when and
just boom.
He didn't blow up several times, but yet he lived. And I also enjoyed hearing the case of you know, the famous one where the, you know, the lady.
Oh yeah,
just
Mary Reeser.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Mary Reeser. You know, the cases are as fascinating as the theory. So
well, yeah, and a case or two
would be interesting.
Well, and also to illustrate that this, you know, it isn't just a myth. I mean, this is something that really happens to people, right? Do you have a couple cases?
Oh, we can give you scores and scores and scores. the one that we first read about when we got introduced to this phenomenon was that of Mary Reeser. We read about her when we were in junior high school back in the 60s.
Yeah.
The case that we became aware of that really grabbed our attention, you know, and excited our curiosity and said, my God, this is nothing that we've ever seen in any of the forensic journals that we've studied up to this point, was the flaming fate that befell Dr. John Irving Bentley in northern Pennsylvania in December of 1966. This is the classic case of spontaneous human combustion that just about anybody who knows anything about the subject knows of now.
Okay.
Probably becoming the most famous case of planning that of Mary Reeser. Dr. Bentley was a 92-year-old physician, well-beloved in the community of Cowdersport, not overweight, actually quite emaciated.
Mm-hmm.
On the morning of December 5 of 1966, his ashen remains were found by a meter reader in the basement of his home on North Main Street in Cowdersport. How we know that was a human body in those ashes was that he left one half of one leg lying tangential to the hole in his bathroom floor through which the rest of his body immolated.
Yeah, and we've seen that one before.
That's the photograph that he was an invalid. He used an aluminum walker to move through his two-room apartment. That walker was lying askew atop the hole.
Mm-hmm.
We were at the fire scene. By the time we got there, the hole in the floor had been patched over, but everything else was intact as it had been left by the firefighters in 1966, including the bathtub that was just above one edge of the hole through which Dr. Bentley's body burned.
Uh-huh.
That bathtub had been painted with enamel paint. The paint did not even blister. There was no heat or scarring damage to the ceiling overhead. There was a low ceiling. We could touch it with our outstretched arm. The first responders to Dr. Bentley's fire scene were completely befuddled. The true nature of the case was not even revealed to Dr. Bentley's son, who only discovered the strange way in which his father transitioned when he saw us discussing the case in 1980, it was, on a program called That's Incredible for ABC.
That
was when that case was basically introduced to the world. And it's become the quintessential poster boy for SpawnCom ever since, probably. One of the amazing characteristics at that fire scene, and was also present at the Reeser fire scene, was the absence of notches, burned flesh odor. Don Gosnell, the meter reader who discovered the fire scene, said that when he entered the home of Dr. Bentley, there was a sweet, redolent odor in the atmosphere of the apartment. And we've heard that said again and again by first responders at these amazing fire scenes. There's another case that received a lot of attention that we discovered and devote another chapter in our book Ablaze to, and that is the case of Helen Conway, also here in Pennsylvania, back in 1964. She was found on a Sunday morning in November of that year, burned basically to nothing other than two legs propped up against the front of the chair in which she had been seated. Now, what is so astonishing about this case, beyond the extent of burn damage to the body, and again, the absence of any kind of noxious odor at the fire scene, was the time element. The disbelievers in spontaneous human combustion will invariably invoke the wick theory to explain away not having to deal with SpawnCom itself. And that theory basically is this: the human body is an inverted candle. The clothing of the victim is the wick, and the fat, the adipose tissue inside the victim is the tallow wax of the candle.
And I've read about this, actually. Yeah.
Right. Once the wick or the clothing is ignited by an external ignition source, drop cigarette most likely, the body will rise, or the clothing will cause the heat of combustion to reach the point where the fat in the body of the victim will begin to render out, becoming the fuel for the fire.
Mm-hmm.
This meant that we've attempted this experiment. We cannot get it to work. This experiment has been attempted many times on television, notably by one forensic scientist named John DeHaan. He has failed miserably four times to get it to come anywhere close to replicating a classic spontaneous human combustion fire scene, and yet he stands by his theory, even though the theory has been unable to replicate and improve. Back to the Conway case, what makes it so dramatic and so belies even trying to invoke the Wick theory is the time element in which she had to incinerate her body. We spoke to the first responders, the fire chief, the deputy fire marshal, and the fire photographer who later became the fire marshal for that jurisdiction. All three gentlemen affirmed to us categorically and without equivocation that at most Mrs. Conway had 21 minutes from the time that she was known to be alive until they arrived to find a fire that basically they did not have to put out.
Mm-hmm.
That time of 21 minutes when we spoke at length with the fire photographer included the time that it took him to run back from the fire scene, get his camera, come back to the fire scene, have the smoke ejected, and begin taking photographs. When you subtract that time from the 21 minutes that the fire chief told us was the maximum time allowable, then you're down to 6 minutes.
Oh, wow. So 6 minutes to burn, basically that's what you're saying, the whole body.
But it also burned itself out completely.
Yeah, it ran out of an accelerant. It ran out of whatever.
You said, Larry, that they didn't have to put it out.
Pretty much so. In the Wick experiments that John DeHaan is attempting for television, he's repeatedly almost burned down the burn chamber itself. He doesn't have a localized self-extinguishing combustion fire. He has a roaring inferno that is about to go flashover. And one of the television shows that he and we participated in, the show was actually quite dishonest. And what was depicted on the show for the Wick experiment was a localized blaze on a chair, and then Mr. DeHaan comes back on camera and says, look, the fire is out, localized, combustion scene. Just the kind of thing that Larry Arnold labels spontaneous human combustion. Look, I've proven I'm wrong. Well, what was not shown on air was what we got from the director's cut, which included a few seconds of very embarrassing footage. That is, the room was going almost flashover. There was a roaring inferno that had to be extinguished by fire suppression equipment. Now, we don't get those situations or that situation at scenes of classic spontaneous human combustion. So the Wick experiment so far has failed miserably, and it's been stood by and defended dishonestly. If you can't be honest with your experiment, then don't say the experiment works.
And I completely agree with that.
Good.
is there a cosmic ray, or could somebody have invented a ray gun, maybe the secret ops of the military? I mean, because a lot of this, Larry, we've seen this before in sci-fi movies. We see disintegrator guns.
Disintegrate. Yeah.
And that's kind of what this looks like. It's
an idea.
Leering. I mean, is there a ray of any kind that could do this to a human body that might just zing through 500 times in a couple of hundred years?
Actually, yes.
Oh, yeah.
The government right now has the technology. They shifted overseas, whereby they can control crowds by blasting them at distance with basically a sonic ray gun that internally heats the body to the point where the rioter, the malcontent, the insurgent can't deal with it and has to drop back. We have cases in our book Ablaze where hang gliders, for example, have flown in microwave radiations from Paypal radar units, and they've been burned. Now, in this case, we know what caused the spontaneous human combustion, but at the time that they experienced it, certainly they were unaware that they were flying into a high-intensity microwave beam. They just knew that their body spontaneously burned.
You know, and I've heard there's other, and this may be related in some way, in the Montauk case, In the stories of Montauk, they talk about the dish. I don't know if you've ever heard of Montauk before, Larry, or not. But the giant radar dish they had there. They said that you know, this is all, you know, I can't prove any of it. I mean, it's theory like anything else is, but they said theoretically one of the things they were using that dish for when Montauk was operational was that that dish was basically, you know, they were just pushing out massive just signals.
Amounts of signals and energy,
yeah,
and mind control
experiments. Yeah, well, mind control experiments. And what they said they would do to some people, like Al Bielek, for example, who was involved with this thing, he said he didn't want to do it no more, and they said, look, you're going to keep working, and he said no. So they said, okay, fine. And they slapped him right in front of this thing and just gave him like a full blast of it. And he said basically what he said he survived that, but normally what that would do to people, and like I said, this is just theory again, he's like, it would literally heat your brain up and fry your brain where you would still function, but you'd be pretty much a vegetable afterwards. I mean, it would just shut you down. You know, so there are these things out there that can internally heat the body, I guess, just by, you may not even see them, for God's sake. I don't know what a sonic ray looks like. I've never seen one for real. Can people see these things coming at them, Larry?
Most likely not. Unless you have sensitivity to radiation beyond the normal ocular range, no, you would not see it.
Okay.
Interesting.
We're getting out here a little bit, but that they do come back. It does come back to this thing, like, what could be the explanation for these things that happen?
Well, the only thing that, invisible rays. I mean, it can
maybe these people made somebody mad in the government, and they said, oh, you got to get rid of you, buddy.
when I put my food in the microwave, I can't.
You can't see the microwave.
Yeah, I just see it cooking. Well, is it still as rare? I mean, because now we're in the modern age, right? Where
one would hope.
Yeah, we're in the modern age. Well, sure. Of course, by definition. I mean, you know, even the 1950s were the modern age in the 1950s. But,
yeah.
I mean, we're in the modern era of internet and computers, and I can dash off an email that goes around the world in you know, faster than I can blink my eye. You know, I can stay in constant contact with everybody. I can text anybody on the planet that has one of those.
Yeah.
I mean, we're in communications age. So I'm wondering, has the reporting of
such kinds of
events,
this is good,
picked up with the communications, or is it still equally as rare, meaning that it was so bizarre that every case got reported?
Well, we know from our research, we just know from intellectual reasoning that not every case has been reported throughout history.
Yeah.
Back in the 1600s, the only cases that likely would have been reported to the medical community would have involved famous people, you know, people
right.
of nobility.
Mm-hmm.
Peasants, the peons of the time simply would have now never gotten reported,
yeah.
Never would have made the medical literature. That certainly has changed over the intervening centuries, but still this is, as we said earlier, an extremely rare phenomenon. And because it is so problematic and invokes so much xenophobia, it is still to this day amazingly difficult to discover these cases. Often when we get a lead on a case, we make the phone calls to local firefighters and so on. Some of them are quite reticent to discuss it. Some of them will not discuss it. If they can offer us a prosaic, conventional explanation, wonderful. We're not looking here to mystery monger. We're looking to find the facts of every individual case. If there's no mystery, there's lots of other curious things to investigate. But there are enough of these cases of spawn calm that stand up, we believe, to the most rigorous scrutiny if one is interested in finding the facts and being honest with the evidence that history presents. And then we need to go from there. But this is an extremely difficult subject to investigate to this day.
Well, if people were to get involved with this, if people were to want to participate, and maybe, because, I mean, this seems like a pretty easy, I mean, not easy, but there's a fire station in every city just about. It seems like, you know, if you could go over there, and if people out there, like you guys out here listening to this right now, if this is a subject that really sparks your interest, which I hope it does.
Sparks your interest.
Oh, shut up. Come on. Larry.
Tell
Doug to shut up, Larry, because
I started the hour off with one of the worst ones ever, so there you go.
If this subject piques your interest, okay, this is, it's kind of like an easy, I mean, not, I shouldn't say easy, but you could go to your local fire station and see if these people would, you know, and tell them, like you just said, Larry, I'm not mystery mongering here, I really want to get some facts here. Have you experienced or seen any cases of what you think might be spontaneous human combustion? Because, it's as mysterious as anything else we've talked about on this show, I think. And it's ominous, too. I mean, like I said, what got me into this was just seeing these photos.
These are photos taken by the investigators at the scene.
Yeah, these are crime.
And I have to say that I cannot agree with that doctor from Ohio saying, oh, well, these are obviously faked, because they're obviously done by a source that was doing their job. Well, I mean, they...
Well, Larry, according to what you have, I mean, did that doctor ever rebuke with say anything besides, you know, this isn't true, that's why it's fake? I mean, that's pretty much the answer he gave you, is that I don't really care.
Yeah, we talked to Dr. Addison about that and said, you know, you've written about the subject, you've denied it, you invoked the weak theory, you know, have you ever personally investigated a case yourself? His answer was, no, I haven't. Basically, his mind was made up, and it was that spontaneous human combustion is a myth, a fairy tale, a fable, and that's all he needed to know about it. We've spoken to scores of firefighters, hundreds of firefighters who share the same viewpoint. One in particular, when we put on his desk the photographs of Mary Reeser, Helen Conway, Dr. Bentley, and said, look, if you were called to a fire scene, and this is what you found at the fire scene with these photographs depict,
yeah,
you tell us, how would you explain it? You know, you're the expert. You help us as a layman understand this. And his response was, I'd go out, I'd get drunk, and I'd forget about it.
So wow.
That doesn't stand science, but it shows where his mindset was. You know, if somebody has an idea about this, might know of a case that would be of interest to our research,
yeah,
please contact us. Go to the website. Our email is there for this subject. Shoot us an email, mm-hmm, and we'll do our best back and see where the information would lead.
It seems that a firefighter would be interested to find out what may be happening with this so they could prevent it from happening.
Or maybe they're scared of it. I said right at the beginning, I said, this is scary stuff.
So is running into a building that's on fire, but that's what they do for a living.
That's a great point. We've pondered that ourselves. We've actually asked some firefighters who were at these amazing fire scenes, you know, why didn't you pursue it more? You know, where's your curiosity?
I'm scared.
Usually it is, well, you know, we're so busy, you know, we fight a fire, we put it out, we file the report, and then there's another fire to put out. And we just kind of, we never get around
more
to it.
More rubber stamping.
We're familiar with that recently.
We live in a world of work queues and rubber stamping, unfortunately.
Yeah, put it in this bin.
Yeah, and then someone will take it out and process it later.
Yeah.
Larry, wow. Yeah, unfortunately.
What an hour.
I knew it was going to happen.
So much.
Yeah. And this is, again, this... It's such a fascinating subject. And we didn't cover half of what we could have talked for a week straight, probably, and not covered, you know, that much of it. Probably.
Your website is www.parascience.com. That's parascience.com. That'll be permanently linked up over at ghostlytalk.com. Larry, I have to thank you so much for coming on and sharing all this and telling us. And you know, there's the books, what, A Blaze and A Blaze 2. Is there a third book?
Actually, at this point, there's just one, Ablaze. Oh, there is a Japanese translation, but most of your listeners probably won't be interested in that. Yeah, go to the website. We'll make you guys a special offer. Anybody contacts us in the next fortnight through the end of February. To U.S. listeners, we will ship the book to you postpaid for $20. That's a 20% discount off the list price.
Cool.
Sometimes Amazon is selling it for as much as $80. It will be a first edition. $20 to the end of February to any of your listeners who contact us through the website.
And all you listeners, my birthday is coming up next month. So
my birthday is going on right now, actually.
Yeah, your
so
birthday you is just today. Yeah.
Yeah. Why don't you just send one over? Before the show ends here in a minute, I think you should be clicking that PayPal button.
And go to parascience.com.
Wow. I mean, whoring yourselves out, guys.
Yes. Bonnie, you know, I'm...
Well, you know,
anytime,
nobody seems to do that nowadays, so we gotta cover that hole. You know?
Wow.
So there you go. Larry, hang on the line for 1 second, okay, Larry?
We just want to close the show out real quick, Larry. Again, the website, parascience.com, a special offer, $20, postpaid and everything, at parascience.com. The book is called Ablaze. We have to thank Larry Arnold for that. We have to thank Philip Spencer.
Fascinating discussion with Philip.
Absolutely fantastic. And then sticking in that southern kind of realm, we talked with Zach Adams about BellWitchLegendMovie.com.
Yeah, the BellWitch Legend
Phenomenal
movie.
Stuff.
We started out a little rough tonight, but I think we got through it. Hopefully
Nobody hates
you. Yes.
Well, maybe we hope they do.
Whatever. Next week, Bonnie and myself will be remote from 77 degrees in Florida.
But I will, on the other hand, be here freezing my tail off probably still, working myself half to death in the Haunted Winery studio. These guys will be remoting, like you said.
Yes.
I think we might have a couple of guest hosts also, special guest hosts that will be joining us. I'll figure that
out.
Well,
we will have a Mai Tai for you.
At the Tiki Bar.
At the Tiki Bar.
Very nice.
You guys, everybody, thank you for listening. This has been Ghostly Talk, and I'm Doug.
I'm Scott L.
And I'm Bonnie.
See you guys next week.